The lights start dim. You see in front of you a cabinet. You slide the door open, and in it shines a book. And as the blinding light fades, you see Pathfinder. This week on Game Cabinet, we're talking one of my favorite games that probably exists, period. I am a huge Pathfinder buff, but we're going to sit around and talk about our experiences, what we love, what we don't love, the usual. But this week, it's Pathfinder.
Rule for initiative.
Oh, hi, guys.
Hi.
With me this week, I've got my usual lovely crew of George over across from me.
Well, hello there.
And on our soundboard, making sure we sound good.
As best I can. All of us up here with our allergies today, just like, oh, this is an awful day to record.
But we'll make it through. I think I've been playing Pathfinder for about, oh, geez, this is probably my 10-year anniversary with it or so.
Wow.
This year. Yeah. I got to play some like 3.5 when I was 13, played like maybe a session or two. Things didn't pan out for a really long time. And then suddenly we found this wonderful group to sit around and play Pathfinder with. And I became obsessed with how much fun this game is. I'll start with one of the bigger upsides and downsides: options. Oh my god, are there so many options to this game that it can
choice
be overwhelming.
Choice paralysis, man.
So
oh
much
my
choice
god.
Paralysis. I think I suffered from the choice paralysis because by the time I started playing, so if I started playing around 16, let's see, that was 10 years ago, so that put it at 2011? Yeah, 2011, so
oh
Pathfinder's
god.
Only been out for about 3 years when I started playing,
okay.
But even then, they already had Player's Handbook and your basic three. But they also had Bestiary 2 out by then. They already had a couple of the extra class books out by then. I think that they had already put out the Advanced Player's Guide and at least Ultimate Combat.
Mm-hmm.
God, no wonder it's been so easy to keep collecting this game the whole time I've been playing.
And Pathfinder was Paizo's solution to the mess that was 4th edition D&D, yeah?
More or less. I did do some actual, like, extra digging this week for it, because that's how much I love this game. I don't do research very often, but when I do, man, is it about something I love. They used to write for Dungeons & Dragons a magazine called Dragon & Dungeon, and essentially it would have little interviews, things like that, and then normally it'd come with, like, a small adventure path.
Okay.
These nice, really nice contained little one-shots that you could do nice and easy, move on with your friends and have a good time. When 4th edition started to come out, they started seeing some of the trends because they got some of the stuff a little earlier. They started seeing what was kind of happening with it and they weren't particularly stoked. So they cut away and became kind of their own thing at that point, where they started with just releasing like some adventure paths, and then in 2006, I think it was, they announced Pathfinder would be coming, like Pathfinder the RPG that
nice.
Was set in this world of Galarian that they had already pretty well established with all of their adventure paths, because that's where their adventure paths always took place, was in this world of Galarian. And so they just really expanded out on that and started to produce a actual world for it, and then they took advantage of a lot of the Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 open gaming rules, yeah, and started building their own thing. And I love 5e, but I still highly prefer going back and playing 1st edition Pathfinder, because we are on 2nd edition finally. But Pathfinder to me has been one of those things that no matter what I'm looking to do with either a character or an NPC, I've always been able to find something to do that. My favorite characters are all of them but one are probably Pathfinder characters. I love Philip. My ranger was fun. It was a drag the whole time I played him because of how bad the PHB's rangers are, unfortunately, in 5e.
Mm.
They've done a lot better since with every other book that they've introduced an archetype for.
And I'm still over here like, Hunter is still one of my absolute favorite ranger classes of all time. I adore it. But then again, I play a lot of flavor more than I play mechanics.
I tried going Beastmaster. And
oh, Beastmaster is garbage trash.
I saw that Slayer was also going to be kind of trashy. So I was like, well, at least this will give me a heavy RP tool to have. And then as much as I love my GM, He did not get my pet to me for like 3 or 4 sessions. And by then I was kind of starting to become jaded because everybody else is sitting around using all this cool ass stuff that that they just got for their archetypes. And I'm still sitting there twiddling my thumbs. Yep. I shoot stuff.
Beastmaster is one of those ones where it's like, it's really fun until about level 5 or 6. And then it just stops growing with your character at all,
yeah.
Which is why I prefer Hunter, because it's actually a useful class. You have preferred enemies, you have favored terrain, you have like all of this cool stuff that you can use.
Let's talk about favored terrain. Let's talk about that. I am super disappointed in favored enemies and favored terrain in 5e.
Yeah.
Compared to Pathfinders, it's something to scoff and laugh at.
That's fair. Pathfinder, like you said, it has a lot of like customization and like it's a bigger option pool.
Well,
5e was designed to be super streamlined and to take a lot of the clutter out, which makes it feel real limited.
I would agree, but the fact that the base abilities, no feats, no extra anything, no archetypes, nothing. The Pathfinder favorite enemy is 30 times better. It is nice to get the advantage, I will say, from 5e, the fact that you get to roll those 2d20s. But in Pathfinder, you get an extra, like, plus 10 when you're making your knowledge marks, which almost as good. Almost. But you also get extra damage. You also get extra points for looking for that thing. You get a lot of extra stuff that the 5e one is. You get advantage when you're looking for them.
You get advantage on damage when you fight them, too.
I don't think you get advantage on damage when you fight them.
I think at higher levels when you take Hunter, you do.
Then see, that's the other thing. Now we're talking option pool, and if we want to talk option pool, now I can bring in all my, you know, just my player handbook options become a little bit more. I love Hunter. I played it for ridiculously long without multiclassing and probably should have multiclassed around level 7. Like, should have got that last real nice thing out of it and been like, all right, cool, we're gonna go rogue or something else. That is something I do like about 5e. It kind of forces you to multi-class a little bit more. Like, if you want a little more flavor, like you want a little more something to bring into your character, it's also really easy to multi-class, which is nice.
Yes, it is extremely.
Yeah, Pathfinder, not so easy to do. So it is kind of nice that there are those things, at least for 5e. But with Pathfinder's, like, they're everything. Like, you were talking the option pool. If you are a choice paralysis person, buy 2 or 3 books. Don't buy any more than that. Like, just stay there for a minute. Because I think by the time, like, now when I'm building NPCs, I've become a little more comfortable setting out my 12 books around me and being like, okay, this is what I want from this guy. What feats do I need to get to this point? Like, and that's something that I had to train myself in, not being like, well, there's so many choices. Like, no, most of them have a tier system to them. Like, power attack leads to cleave leads to greater cleave. And so that when you kind of start seeing those little trails, you can kind of start cutting things out, being like, okay, well, I don't have to worry about this unless this is something I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've seen some dudes take greater cleave, and I have almost banned that rule or that feat from my games because I've seen dudes clear whole entire rooms with a reach weapon. You know, it's nice. Like, oh, reach, cool, cleave, 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 cleave. The room is dead.
Congratulations, encounter failed.
Yeah, guess you guys are just done here.
So for
spontaneous reanimation.
For the listeners at home, I guess I just being the fly on the wall for now, up until this point, I can see people that maybe haven't played role-playing games but are interested, maybe having a hard time finding a way in on this conversation. But just in general, to simplify it just as like its core baseline to think about, Pathfinder came from the 3rd edition of Dungeons & Dragons, put simply.
Yeah.
3.5 technically, but the 3rd edition of Dungeons & Dragons stopped. This company didn't want to let go, being Paizo.
No,
and so they continued making what effectively feels like a version of the 3rd edition of Dungeons & Dragons, but with more of everything.
Yeah, a lot of people call it D&D 3.75.
Yeah. As a loving nickname, yeah. Which it feels like that. Yeah. It really does. But I guess probably the most important thing to know about going forward, just not going forward, but when you're thinking about it, is there's more involved in the player side and the game master side with Pathfinder. But if that's something that you like, and if you like kind of learning rule set, there is so much more to sink your teeth into rules-wise and just customizability, like you guys have been saying. So Pathfinder has a huge advantage on that front, especially since they now have a complete edition. It's done. Pathfinder First Edition is a complete game.
Yeah, and it has its problems. I haven't found any that I'm like, this is stupid broken. Advanced Class Guidebook. That whole book is broken. All of it. All but two classes, maybe. I can only really think of one that I think is acceptable. Hunter, out of the Advanced Class Guide. It's a Ranger-Druid mix, essentially. That's what the entire Advanced Class Guidebook does, is they kind of mix two classes together. And anybody who looks at me and goes, I want to play a Beastmaster Ranger, I look at them and go, no, you don't. You want to play Hunter. Here you go. Because I think in base Ranger, they don't get their pet till level 3 or 5, somewhere in between there. And then it keeps that amount of levels behind you the whole way.
Which is super weird.
And whereas a druid gets their animal companion at level 1 and it gains 20 levels with them. And that's why that's one of the few classes I will be like, okay, if that's really what you want to do, then you can play Hunter, because it isn't like the Slayer where it gives fighter amount of attacks with rogue burst damage. Imagine getting 6 hits a round with the chance that if you're flanked, you're also getting sneak attack on all of those. So an additional, depending on your level, 1 to 76.
Or like Summoner, where you then have to also play another character completely.
That one's not even in the Advanced Class Guide. That's just in the Ultimate Magic.
Oh my god.
That is also one of those classes I've pretty much banned out of my games. And whether I sound like a bad person for that or not, I've seen people try to play these classes. It does not work. Like the Advanced Players one, if you're playing with two people who have Advanced Player classes and everybody else is running, I think I was running 6 people at the time, so 4 didn't. Those two characters carried the entire session, entire campaign.
If you're going to play out of the Advanced Players Guide, everybody needs to play out of it.
Everybody should be playing out of it. And that's where I've kind of come with that. So this book is unaccepted except for Hunter, unless you all want to play these classes. That's fine. It limits you class-wise a little bit, but it also gives you these kind of more ferocious characters.
It would kind of be fun to play a higher level campaign where it's all just Advanced Player Guide.
I would love to do starting at level 5, Advanced Player's Guide Mythic campaign.
Oh, that would be kind of fun.
For those who don't know, Mythic is you have your normal levels and then you have your Mythic levels, and they do different things depending on what Mythic path you take. I took Trickster the first time I played Mythic, and that made my rogue stupid. that's the only way to put it, is it made it really, my GM got to the point that he would stack characters together so that I couldn't get flanking because of how much damage I could just outright do.
For the folks at home, and for me even, because I'm not exactly sure how that works, I've never done a Mythic one, is it that you start at level 5 and you just start taking Mythic levels, or you have to get to 20 and then start? How does that work?
So for how Mythic works is you can start at any level you want. Sure. I've just kind of come to the point that D&D's level 3 is equivalent to Pathfinder's level 5. It's just when your archetype starts really clicking in, you start feeling the class choices that you've made. So I kind of like to start there if I'm going to do a Mythic, so that people have a good, solid foundation.
Sure.
And then Mythic levels are completely on their own. And so some GMs will do levels, certain levels, you'll get a new Mythic tier.
Okay.
A lot of the GM that I played with, he did it based on accomplishments that we had. We all were given cursed items. We got rid of our cursed items, we didn't gain just one, but we gained 2 tiers of Mythic.
Oh,
because
wow.
We all had to sacrifice something. My rogue had to sacrifice his hand for the 3rd time that game. took my hand a lot.
How did you sacrifice 3 hands?
So the first hand...
It got better.
So I had some wish spells. At one point, one of my hands was crushed, and our healer wasn't high enough level to fix the hand, essentially. And so it was crushed off of my hand.
Oh,
and I was like, all right, well, that's a thing. I happen to have some wish spells. I got a Harrow reading, which is kind of their tarot for Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. But I had gotten a Harrow reading, and I got to draw a card. And depending on what you drew, depending on kind of what you got, it's kind of like a deck of many things, but with a lot less
death. Or,
yeah, a lot less death. You know, you can get anywhere from here's an extra 100 gold to roll 1d4 wishes, of which I rolled 4. So he crushed my hand off. I wished for it back. He put it on my belt.
Oh, no.
Had to wish for my hand to regrow back again. And then he put a ring on my character to where I could not tell a lie. And at this point, I had been lying to my group a lot about treasure. Oh, I found 50 gold over there. Not 350 gold. You know, whatever.
Okay, you found 50 gold amidst the rest of the gold.
Yeah. And so, which was really fun. That really was the first time I was kind of forced to start RPing certain things. And that really helped me probably later on develop RP a lot better. When I got a little older, a little more comfortable.
Did it give you the opportunity to work on the aspect of omission of truth rather than outright lie?
Yeah.
There you go.
So commonly when I would think that I see something, I had 2 gold that I essentially tied string to and kept up my sleeve. And then when I would find something that I thought was neat, I'd drop that onto the floor and look away while I dropped it. And then I'd look back and be like, oh, look, 2 gold and these things. And so I'd just come back and be like, I found 2 gold. A couple of my party members would be like, oh, did you find anything else? Oh, yeah, this ruby. Like, I just started dropping more and more things to, like, the more times they would ask me, did you find anything else? I'd just start dropping more things in front of me to find.
It's just like one of those clown cars. You're just like, oh, and a rubber chicken. Oh, and this. Oh, yeah, and this.
Like, just all sorts of things. I ended up with, like, boots and a cloak of spider climb because of it. So I could just spider climb for, like, 10, 15 rounds. People just look, how are you doing that? Don't worry about it.
Like, Drew, stop crawling on the ceiling. Get down here.
I don't have to. I have a better chance at sneak attack damage from up here.
Why would I walk on the ground where all the traps are when I can walk on the ceiling where all the traps aren't?
Exactly. On top of that, like, I did get to use it once to, like, drop down behind a guy, and I tried to non-lethally kill him, but my GM couldn't accept that because I, at that point, had Fickle Dice 2. I had about 66 sneak attack damage.
So you just murked this poor guy.
More or less. With Fickle Dice, essentially what it does is, depending on what rank you have, it turns X amount of numbers into the highest amount possible.
Yeah.
So, like, if I rolled, I think with your first level all the way up to 3 levels of it, it starts with any ones become 6, the top number for damage. Only damage. It very much states damage. So ones become 6s, and then I think at that point I had 2 tiers in it. So ones and twos just became instantly 6s.
Oh no.
Yeah, I think I max damaged the dude, and he's like, he's not dead, but he's not okay anymore. Like, you may have caused, like, severe brain damage. He might not wake up. Like,
oh,
just comatose,
dude.
Instantly. But that was a really fun thing that I was able to do with lying. But yeah, at that point, we got to the top of a mountain where we were originally with this, with Mythic. We all passed out from having some sort of minor vision, essentially, of what we were supposed to kind of do. And essentially, I just, looking at my GM, really annoyed at this point, because this is the third time I have to get rid of my hand. Or the third time I'm going to lose my hand or have spent resources to get it back. Just have my, like, I literally just put it out. I'm like, just cut it off. I'm done with this. Like, just do it. And then we woke up, and he was like, cool, you have mythic tears at this point. Like, these are your next myth. You get your mythic tears. Go ahead and pick these things. I think we beat one of the minor bosses. We got another mythic tier.
So for the listeners at home who maybe haven't played Pathfinder, explain just a little bit about mythic.
How
does it differ from standard leveling?
So you have your heroes of Galarian, essentially. Mm-hmm. Those are every adventurer who walks the planet has a chance to be a hero, essentially. The mythic heroes are essentially somebody who's been touched by a god specifically. And so it is these, you're not just a adventurer hero, you are a champion of this thing. And so the gods tend to smile upon you and giving you better and better boons, essentially. Like I said, I got to turn ones and twos into sixes damage. Things like that, depending on what kind of, it doesn't always have to be based around a god, but like based around what these gods might see. Like, I don't have to worship the trickster god, but he sees what I'm doing and is like, oh, okay. You obviously are going to be doing things I want to see happen in the world. I'm going to bestow my favor upon you. And so they're kind of just that one up above a normal adventurer, essentially. If you kind of think about it like Greek mythology style, mm-hmm. It's like your basic soldiers were kind of heroes throughout a lot of those tales. Whereas like Theseus is a mythic hero. He became something. His story's still told today.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal. And that's kind of the big difference. It's like, oh no, people will remember you for a long time because of this kind of stuff. Like, you're going to be a potent force of whatever will.
Campfire tales.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to scratch your name into a wall somewhere. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, minor, you know, kind of like Hercules, kind of almost deities at that point, because they're just giving so much extra favor to you.
Just to quickly circle back around to some more of the basic stuff, it effectively, if you're looking at or you're thinking about starting a role-playing game because they've sounded fun and you keep hearing people talk about Dungeons & Dragons and then how much, you know, fun their group is having and all those kinds of things, the setup in the group organization is identical to what it would be for something like Dungeons & Dragons. You can have the same number of people, you can have the same one person who runs the game, and, you know, anywhere between, honestly, as few as one if the people are comfortable enough with each other, or as many as six, sometimes more.
I've played at D&D tables with 8+ people, and like, it can be done,
but it's
but oh my god,
it's hard to do well.
Yeah,
three to five players seems to be the sweet spot. If you can get with those, that many people, plus, you know, the person who's running the game and generally spending a little bit more time getting it ready to run. For context, I believe, if I'm not much mistaken, the phenomenon that has become Critical Role started playing Pathfinder back at the home game before they started streaming it and putting it online and stuff. So the way that they transitioned from Pathfinder into 5th edition is the same way that I actually transitioned from 3.5 to Pathfinder originally, way back about 10 years ago or so, when somebody else was running a game for that. So it's the kind of thing where you don't have to change the group. You can just pick which game that the group itself likes or the person who's running it wants to run, because it's kind of more work on their end than anybody else's.
Like, I throw a lot of flack at 5e, but it really is the best way to get into like RPGs and stuff like that. Most of the time I suggest people do 5e before Pathfinder.
And I think that's what 5e was designed for. Like, honestly, I feel like Wizards went, we really want people to get back in to Dungeons and Dragons. We want people to get back into really falling in love with RPGs.
Yeah.
So let's make an RPG that is super new player friendly, that doesn't have a lot of the old rule set that we used to have. Let's cut out everything that's complicated and just make it a really straightforward RPG system, which 5e does. They
tried it with 4th edition and failed miserably. Well, so I'm glad to see their next rendition did better.
I think they achieved capturing the spirit of 3.5 and Pathfinder with 5th edition, if not like the crunchiness of the rules and the sink your teeth intuitiveness.
They caught that spirit, because I never played 4th edition. All the guys that I knew who were very much the dudes I listened to when it came down to RPGs went, and they were like, don't.
I've never heard anything good about 4th edition, ever.
Yeah, they were like, we know you're an old WoW head, but we also know you're trying really hard to start RPing better and to be role-playing better with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of them were like, don't do it. You'll backslide. Sure. Because it had a mana system. It was very combat-oriented by what I heard. Like, everything was just very, let's go get those video gamers onto tabletop.
Sure.
And then this time it felt like they were like, let's just reach out to people who want to play RPGs and make it easy to do so. Yep. Which is, I like 5e, I think our main our main game that we played for, what, a year and a half, 2 years, was at least, a D&D game.
Yeah.
But
at least 2 years.
I've really enjoyed, like, I haven't played Pathfinder that long. I think I've been playing with you mostly.
Yeah.
For like, I mean, I guess
I think we played for about a year before we
had a year-long hiatus. Say, I think it's been about a year since we've played, but we played for about a year. And I really enjoy Pathfinder. I do find it a little overwhelming. For me, there's a lot, like, those character sheets have a lot of information on them. Like, it gets really confusing for me to, like, sort everything and remember what I have to add to roles. Like, if I'm doing this, what do I have to add to a role? Versus when I'm doing this, what do I have to add to a role?
Yeah.
If you're flat-footed or if you're, you know, like, it's like all of those differentials. And I'm like, I don't really remember what I need.
The other little loving nickname that it's gotten from time to time is Math Finder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's not inappropriate.
Well, and so that does, though, bring us to a really good point. I know a lot of people who feel that way about, there's so much on here that I don't know what all I need to add. Having a half-decent GM. Like, I know dudes who have done it their first time, but just because their GMs did it for them, they kind of do it for others, is having somebody to help you do all the math to start with. Like, sitting down and be like, hey, we're going to go through and add up all of your skills, even the ones you're not proficient in, just so that when I say, everybody roll a this, you have that number right here.
I think for me, it's more, because I write down all those, all, like, on my character sheets, even in 5th edition, I have a list on the edge of my character sheets that's like, hey, when I attack, I roll this, I add this, I add this. Mm. When I do damage, I roll this, I add this, I add this. Like, I have those because I don't like trying to remember them. Pathfinder has so many for me, just for me, that I have a hard time remembering which one is which in which scenario.
I got you. Your spell attack versus your melee attack.
Yeah. Or, you know, like I said, the CMB versus the CND or whatever it is. Like, all of those. I can't even remember what they're called.
No, you had them right. CMB okay. and CMD. For those who don't know, combat maneuver bonus, combat maneuver defense, how well you can grab somebody and how well you can get out of somebody grabbing you.
Yeah. And then the whole thing, like, there's certain times when you attack where you don't get to add a modifier, but there's certain times you attack where you do get to add a modifier, and there's, like, remembering those in combat and everything like that. It just, it overwhelms me a lot, and I'm glad that I play with you guys, because I can be like, hey, I don't remember what I'm supposed to do.
Well, and I try to take a lot of the excess mathy stuff away from you guys.
Yeah.
And not in a, like, oh, they don't know how to deal with this, just more of a, well, if I just deal with it, it makes it that much easier.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I know that this character is currently flat-footed. You know, I'll take care of that on my side. You know, oh, okay, this guy's going to get these, or is getting these negatives. You know, I just try to keep all that on my side, where it's like, you and your stupid curses.
With my hexes that I throw at you all the time, where I'm like, hey, Drew, make sure you remember for the next 6 rounds, this guy gets a -2 for all his armor checks.
Like, and I don't make you remember which one you put that on. Like, I don't make you subtract it off of what you assume their armor
and then I
might
just
be.
And then I just stack them on you. I'm like, oh, hey, now this guy has 5 more rounds where his armor is -2 and 6 rounds where his saves are -2.
And this is why I keep track of all of it.
I can see how having a character kind of like that would get to be a little on the overwhelming side, because it does, I mean, there's a lot to remember.
I love my character in that campaign. If I went back to the very beginning, to character creation day, if I could go back, I'd be like, hey, don't pick a witch as your first character in Pathfinder. You're dumb.
So they're not just spellcasters, they're weird spellcasters on top of that. Yeah. For when you're like, it's almost a class for when you're bored with spellcasting and you're like, I want to try it in like some other way and kind of force myself to work around some stuff.
And I'm falling into the same habit with that as I do with all of my spellcasters in D&D, where I get like the 3 spells that I'm really comfortable with. And then when I level up, I just don't pick new spells because I'm like, no, I like these spells. These spells work. These are what I use. I don't need to look at this. I don't need to look at the hundreds of potential spell options. I'm just going to pick these.
Hannah, you just got 4th level spells, though, and some of them are stupid potent. I don't care, Drew. Leave me alone.
I don't care. All I'm going to do is hex this guy anywhere. There's no reason for me to pick a bunch of spells. I have one action. I'm going to hex him.
You know what would be a really useful spell for you guys, though? Fairy Fire.
I don't know if I can. I don't think I have access to Fairy Fire.
You do.
I don't remember seeing it on the witch's spell list when I looked.
You've totally got access to it.
Oh, I'm going to have to get Fairy Fire.
More like Glitter Bomb. You know, anything to deal with, pardon the language, that closet, as you guys have now named her. I don't even remember what the character's actual name is at this point. That's all I remember her as.
Man, I miss my character from that so much too. I had the opportunity to reprise the character that I had originally done in the first time I played Pathfinder back in the day, like 10-ish years ago. I can't remember exactly how long, but you know, they have weirder stuff that's not super complicated, like a samurai.
I love your samurai so
much. He's so
much
fun.
I love him.
And he kicks so much butt.
Yeah, I was gonna say I played Rogue. Not fighter. What was it? Brawler, which was out of the advanced class guide. That's also one that I'm almost okay with people taking because of the fact that it's kind of a monk fighter mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of hardier monks. That's very much what I felt like when I played mine. So that's almost one that I've been teetering on being like, all right, we can open this up. Barbarian, fighter. And then my absolute favorite class at this point is alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's at this point, I have a hard time picking something that isn't alchemist.
I think you ran a one shot for like Sam and us a while back.
Yeah.
We did a level 20 cam like one shot. And I think I picked alchemist for that one. I either picked Alchemist or Artificer, but I think it was Alchemist because I was mixing potions and throwing bombs at people.
Yeah, yeah, you picked Alchemist.
And I
made you a Grenadier, yeah.
I'd love to reprise that at some point and try it again from, like, level one, because just creating a level 20 character was so chaotic that I couldn't really appreciate everything that that character had.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, like, I didn't see the progression of it. I didn't get to get a feel for the character and learn their quirks and all of that stuff. I was just like, oh yeah, all this stuff. I'm going to throw bombs at a Jabberwocky. Yay!
Yeah, I, with mine, because I did get to watch it grow, and so I did get to start at level 5 or 6.
Yeah.
So I did get to kind of expedite some of the not so fun parts of Alchemist. Your bombs deal damage to your friends until you take a feat for it, or until you take a discovery for it.
Oh, that's
and that
fun.
Discovery is not necessarily available at level 1. I don't remember if it is, but I don't remember taking it.
I mean, our current campaign, we're playing with a fire sorcerer who doesn't care if he does damage to us, so it's fine.
Yeah, but I was the new guy coming into this group, so I had to, like, not try to kill my people, especially seeing how they tried to attack me already.
Hey, in my Discord D&D group, we call that friendship fire.
they got the one time that I, because I don't think I took that with Skippin at all, because I was focusing on him healing and not being a bombardier. And the first time I did it, I hit like 4 or 5 of my party members and they got real mad. Not my fault. My bombs were doing 10 points of splash damage at that point. So our like wizard who had 40 hit points was quartered down. That felt really bad.
Shout out to Sam for playing probably one of the most fun sorcerer characters to play with I've ever had.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We could do an entire episode with just Sam as a special guest and we could just be like, tell us about Burail.
Yeah, just, what's he been up to, bud?
Just the mess that is that sorcerer. I love that campaign.
I do too. With Skippin, I was working on, I was about to take Poison Bomb as a discovery. Because you have to take Smoke Bomb, and then you can take a Poison Bomb. But I was working with Corey, because I was like, look, I did this thing where I shoot poisons, essentially. I was like, and I'm super jacked on healing stuff. Could I essentially use a healing potion in my Smoke Bombs instead to just give an area of effect heal, good guys and bad? And so, like, I was working on cool things like that. That's why I'm a stupid fan of that class at this point. That, and you can take enough archetypes with Alchemist that you don't have to play anything else. They do everything else that everybody does better. Like, oh, you want to be a crazy raged barbarian? Cool. Get it to where you can have 3 mutations a day, jack your strength up by 12 going into the BBEG fight, and hit things as hard as you want.
Oh, you want to be a cleric? Healing potions.
Yeah. Have just a massive amount of healing potions. I think Skippin had 30 by the time that we called it, because we had a week to wait around. So I was like, cool, this is everything I did in a week. And because of how their crafting works, I essentially did it in 1.5 days.
Nice.
So I was just like, here's everything. And I spent 3 days crafting healing potions, which I craft them at like 5 a piece. So it was like 15. I had 15 of them laying around. Nice. That I was like, I can totally infuse these into smoke bombs and not really care about losing a health potion.
Yeah. Fair.
Tiny little anecdote just for frame of reference from the people talking about this. Last week, Drew had came up to me and told me, hey, so we're gonna do Pathfinder on Monday. Now, he was talking about the podcast, but my brain understood that as he was getting the band back together and we were going to sit down to play Pathfinder today. And
the look of disappointment on your face still haunts me.
But preceded by a look of pure joy and happiness that my brain thought for a hot second we were gonna be playing Pathfinder again, and I was so happy. Because that is probably the game, no shade to any of the other games I've played in, but that would have been like one of the happiest news that I've gotten like all year, basically.
I'm not going to lie. When you came up to tell me that story and you're like, yeah, Drew said that we're going to do Pathfinder on Monday, I had a very similar reaction, except mine was like, oh no, I didn't clear my Monday night.
Right.
Drew didn't tell me about this. How can I make this work? And then you're like, for the podcast. And I was like, right.
Right,
the podcast.
Right.
You know, that show we do about games.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, not at all. I mean, I appreciate it. But at the same time, it's really more of a testament to how much fun the game that you were running really was. I mean, that, like, I'm sure we would all be there in a heartbeat whenever the day comes that we end up getting back to that. But at the same time, it's also fun to talk about.
3 or 4 groups now.
Mm.
And this is the first group that, like, I've done extra for, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Like, I'm not just running an adventure path. I have already created side missions that I've already introduced you guys minorly to some of them, super minorly to other ones. Like, literal, if you guys asked for perception checks at this point, you would have noticed some of the keys to these, like, other side quest kind of bits.
Nice.
I've never done that before, and that's why I'm... It's probably my favorite game that we're playing. Like, I feel... I don't know. I played for a long time and did not feel appreciated as a GM.
Which is wild to me, because you're, like, a really good GM.
I try really hard. I don't prep as much these days, primarily because you guys are...
We're crazy.
You guys are a little crazy, so I have to prep, like, four or five directions instead of, like, be like, okay, well, I'm going to prep this, like, one or two directions, and that's what they should will probably
end up
doing.
Oh, man, running that Icewind Dale campaign that I'm doing, I feel your pain so much, because there are so many different places for them to go, and they're all within, like, a day or two's travel of each other, so I never know where these crazy people are going.
Yep.
And I started out with being like, okay, I'm going to prep this town, and then they're obviously going to want to go here, so I'm going to prep this town, too. And then they're like, no, let's go to that other town. And I was like...
Let's go the complete opposite direction.
Guys, I'm not ready for this. I don't know who the NPCs are. I don't know who the town mayor is. I don't know anything about this town. I just know that it exists.
I spent all morning reading on this haunted house from top to bottom because I expected you guys to look around.
Straight to the basement.
Straight to the basement, kill the BBEG, dip out, have TikTok, throw it off of a cliff. It's really disappointing because I thought there was like... Well, you guys can't go back because you kind of destroyed it.
We threw it into the ocean.
We did.
There were panels.
That told the story.
That, like, told a full story from, like, if you looked at them and, like, obviously you would have seen them in kind of a reverse order. But if you had, like, read them and started kind of, like, getting
Listen, we skipped straight to the end of the story, okay? We got the end of the story. We figured out that the guy turned himself into a lich. It was fine.
Right into the end. The better part about that was you guys had a similar situation happen to the group I had joined in with in that moment, where one of your characters looking at the bad guy happened to use, like, Cleanse Evil or something like that to damage him super hard, and gone. The BBEG is dead, too, because that's what kills him. Like, they're straight up like, yeah, if somebody uses this, it cleanses the house of his
Wasn't that Hal that did that?
Yeah.
Like, the cleric was just like, boom. He's just gone.
Yeah, he walked in and he channeled. That's what it was. He didn't even use, like, his channel was just heavy. Like, he rolled just high enough that he essentially was like, poof, and
the guy just...
hit 50% of this thing's health hit points, which... I don't play as much with you guys, but I do with some of the monsters. That is technically an insta-kill in Pathfinder.
Mm.
Like, if you have 100 hit points and I hit you for 50, or 51, it has to be over.
Mm.
That's considered an instant unconscious, because you're literally losing half your vitality at once.
Yeah.
I don't like that rule, so I don't tend to play with it. I use it for, like, smaller creatures sometimes, or, like, if it's gonna be a really cool kind of boss moment for whoever's doing it. I might also let that slide where I'm like, oh, you know what? They did just over half this thing's hit points in one shot. This is kind of going to make them look cool for a minute. Let's just roll with it.
And if you're a DM that's as fun to play a game in a world that they are curating, then you can do something like Hannah did and make your own little game of Animal Crossing on your own little bog swamp farm. And just hang out doing that sometimes.
Yeah, some of my previous other groups would have never taken the time for that.
And I was just like, I was like,
quickly I would have killed their entire farm.
I was just like, what could my swamp witch possibly do that would just make her even weirder? And I was like, I know, I'll just collect every animal that I can possibly collect and just send them back to my swamp hut.
Up to and including a little goblin named Gubby who will help take care of the farm.
And my five goblin babies.
It was three.
Oh, three goblin babies.
It was three. You don't get five baby goblins.
I have it written on my character sheet how many I have, so I would have gotten
that. It's
okay,
they're all going to become your housekeepers.
I love it.
Actually,
and then when I eventually hit level 20 and my house gets chicken legs, I'll move it back to base.
Yeah, we've talked about Pathfinder First Edition. There is technically a second edition out now. One of the big things that they changed, very big things, is goblins are now a playable race.
Which I love, because I'm a goblin person. I'm not going to lie. I love playing goblins.
Pathfinder's goblins are aesthetically the best goblins.
They're so cute.
They're just so cute.
They
are.
I've literally had every time I play a goblin in 5e... I'm like, I want you to know that I'm playing a Pathfinder goblin.
Right,
like,
right.
That's what they look like. They don't look like these goblins. They look like these
ones. They look like Hey Arnold. They got little football heads.
Yeah. the big thing for me was that you could play a goblin in first edition when the advanced race guide came out, but you got like +2, +2, and then -4.
Oh, jeez.
I don't remember what the -4 was too.
I think it was Colin.
And with second edition, they brought him into a more reasonable how the rest of the races kind of worked, like playable races really worked.
Probably
really cool.
Like more similar to a gnome or a halfling as far as stats goes.
Very much similar. Yeah. I think they got Dex and Int, I think is what they got, because like it's common for them to become alchemists, even if it's by accident.
Sure.
But the really cool thing about that's I'm kind of gonna use if we ever end up playing second edition, Gubby is starting the faction. That is why goblins are playable races, is because there's a whole faction of acceptable goblins. Essentially, you kind of wear colors.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like a troop would. You wear colors to indicate I'm part of this goblin clan, and this goblin clan is accepted in Galarian at this point. So, like,
nice.
If you attack those goblins, you are punishable by law.
You know, my witch is just going to turn our home base into like a miniature. Like, I'm going to build a goblin city underneath our base. Like,
and that's
100%
kind of what I expect. And that's why Gubby is going to be like the start of this. Like, hey, I reached enlightenment and I understand that there's more than kill, murder, eat.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's going to help kind of curate that with these three new babies that he's got that he can have. I've got a fun little side arc for you guys that it's going to come up that you're going to have to help Gubby and his goblin children, like, free goblins.
I'm delighted by this. Like, you don't even understand how excited I am about this. Like, I don't even care about the rest of this quest that we're doing. Like, the big bad evil guy, whatever. That's fine. I want to help the goblins 110%.
Oh, yeah. We'll probably make it a nice little side story where you guys will get some really fun loot. That's the other thing about Pathfinder, is Pathfinder has a far more
robust...
I don't know if that's necessarily the right word. Let's go with it. A more robust crafting system. And by that, I mean it actually exists.
Yeah. I will say it was one of the things that disappointed me the most about 5e was like you can take proficiency in like smithing tools and stuff like that, but you can't really make stuff. I mean, like, you can if your DM lets you put flavor into it, but there's not, like, an actual system for creating things. Yeah, you can just be like, I want to make a sword, and they're like, okay.
To circle back around, bringing up something that I feel might be relevant in case any of this sounds interesting to you, dear listener. Pathfinder, first edition and second edition, both have what they call a beginner box. It's not quite as cheap as the D&D ones, but for good reason. The idea is that it's enough that you can get started and play for quite a while. It's not even just like one or two sessions. There's enough for getting your characters from like levels 1 to 4, 1 to 5, somewhere in there. Which is not a small amount of game sessions, unless you're really just burning through story and you really don't care to kind of explore and have fun with...
Whether you do XP or milestone.
Right, right. Also, yes, also very true. But it also, the Pathfinder ones, the ones that Paizo makes, come with some incredibly useful stuff, even when you've moved past it. The one for second edition has over 100 character and monster pawns, which are double-sided. It's not quite as nice as having miniatures for your table, but if you really just need to get started and you want something to visually represent what you're looking at on the table, those are infinitely useful.
Oh, God.
Monster pawns are so great, too.
Absolutely.
And the nice thing is most of them are flat with just the bases, so you can pop the bases off and store them in a very small container instead of minis that take up so much space.
So, small side shout out to Starfinder, which aligns a little bit closer to Pathfinder's second edition, but it's also its own thing to be sure.
I love Starfinder. It's weird.
It is weird, but they have a beginner box for that too. So if your group's like, you know, we kind of like the idea, but we don't really want to go fantasy setting, it's got fantasy in it, but it's definitely far leaning in the sci-fi direction in
goblins
the future and all that kind of stuff.
Goblins in space. Goblins in space.
Yeah. But the crafting system. I am a much bigger fan of it because of the fact that I can sit down and roll and like build these weird bits. I think I once accidentally built, by accident, I mean, I was randomly rolling. I built Shadow Banded Mail.
Okay.
Which by the end of it, essentially the shadow took away your negative for stealthing.
Oh, nice.
And I think it even gave you like +1 or 2 at that point. So you could actually be wearing heavy armor and stealth around.
Oh, that's nice.
Nice.
Yeah, which was really cool. Like, it None of my characters were wearing heavy armor at the time, but it was still a cool, fun thing that they like went and sold for a couple thousand gold, because that's what it was worth. So the other thing is you can build it based off a price if you want. And then you could be a complete crackpot like me and build custom items from the ground up, or steal other people's items ideas and make them more fit to your characters. So like George is about to get the, I think I've already talked with him about it. I'm going to spoil your guys' extra fun bits that you're getting. This seems like a good time to do it. George is getting a Dritz Duradin panther statue, essentially. For those of you who are fans of Dritz, he's getting one, though, for his friend TikTok, which is his mount, which is a bullette that I gave him because he was not aware of my hatred for the advanced class guide to start with. So I wanted to make sure he had a little something fun. But he's going to get a thing for that so that he can not have to have TikTok always in town and not always worrying about people freaking out to this giant metal sharp tooth beast rolling around all the time.
But he just wants to be friends.
Well, and it'll make it a little easier to pop him into a room where you need him and less of, well, let's hope that TikTok makes it in.
You whistle for him and you're like, all right, he'll be here in like 13 rounds.
He is not named after the social media platform.
No, didn't you name him after TikTok Croc?
Yeah, yeah, the crocodile from Peter Pan.
Yeah.
His statue might start making him tick, because I think that'd be funny.
That would be amazing. The closer he gets, the more he ticks.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hannah here with her witch has had this weird obsession with apples the whole time. So I'm about to give her a new hex that is essentially a cantrip that, if cast at a person, will deal 1d4 damage or 1d6 damage, because I'm going to make it a little bit more potent. That's kind of the equivalent of most cantrips in 5e have a d6, whereas the warlock has the d10 because of the lower pool. I'm going to do something kind of similar on that one. So it'll be a d6. And then has one of the cooler abilities I've thought of in quite some time, in my opinion. If you cast it on an apple, it poisons the apple.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'll have actual poison apples.
One attribute. And should you convince somebody to eat it, it will deal 1d4 that attribute.
Too bad only my friends trust her enough to eat the apples she offers.
And that's why I had no problem letting it be 1d4 of whatever you want it to be. Because if you can convince somebody in town to do that, I'm shocked.
Would you like?
You might have a chance while you're in Magnemar, but other than that, like Sandpoint, nobody trusts you enough to eat apples, so I'm not worried about it.
Which is hilarious because she's never, ever, ever given anyone a poison apple. She gives people like the best apples.
Yeah,
like,
and you didn't even have the ability to make poisoned apples at the time. So
she's just like here, have an apple.
Yeah, I felt that would be a. It's a fun one because it works with her character. It gives her an extra little damaging spell, which by what I've seen of your spell list, you don't have a whole lot of them, and it should be an easy one to remember.
That's fair. My spell list is very much just like buffs and debuffs and more buffs and obscuring mist.
But and then having something that can create that little bit of RP, like George's figure, being able to bring it into a room where you might get patted down for weapons and stuff, but nobody pays, you know, somebody doesn't pay attention to that shrine that's in your pocket. Somebody doesn't cast detect magic on you guys before patting you down.
Right. No, this is just my everyday carry, guys. I just like keeping it with me.
This is just my shrine. This is the god I praise. And then, you know, they try to attack you. Here's TikTok in their face. You know, it's just kind of a cool moment.
Bullet, just like, rah!
Yeah. But having these kind of like, being able to build these items and find what you need in the book to kind of base them off of and round them around is really nice. And it's something I'm really dragged down in Pathfinder about. I love crafting classes. Like, that's why I started playing. Corey let me play Gunslinger for a little while.
Yeah.
It was one of the best times I had, being able to craft things, do weird things. Like, my characters tend to be quite quiet in like downtime and stuff like that. So I like having something that my character's doing in that downtime where, maybe I'm BSing with this guy at the bar table, but I've also got all of my kit out in front of me that I can afford to like put on this table and I'm working on stuff.
And I will say that is one of the things that I find really limiting about 5e is even the section of the DMG where it's like, hey, create your own magic weapons. It's three paragraphs long.
Yeah.
And it's basically just like pick an attribute, pick a damage amount, and like pick one other thing, and there's your magic item. And I'm like, no, that's...
Whereas Pathfinder in its base book has 5 pages dedicated to it plus, I think. And then you get to the Ultimate Equipment Guide where there is a thick chunk of chapter that is about enchantments, period, that you can find in the world. Like, insert Elemental Burst.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really fun one. I've given that to a couple people, and one of our rangers took a bow of Lightning Burst, and it hits everything kind of within next to that creature with some splash damage. He was doing way behind everybody, and then was very suddenly caught up to everybody. But that ability to really get in there, look at something else that they have to try to help characters get a little more caught up. That's how I ended up fixing it with my advanced class guys, where I was like, I'm sorry, you're going to get less magical items, and I'm going to give these guys a crap ton to start with so that you guys can get more to an even out level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to still let you be potent. But I was like, hey, you know, you're still going to get some, but these guys are doing 20 less damage than you and have 5 less AC than you. They're going to get stuff first. Like, sorry, but that's how it's going to be. It's going to be kind of a first come, first serve, and they're going to get better stuff to begin with until you're all caught up.
Fair enough.
Fair.
And, you know, it's kind of a nice way to be able to balance it out and take care of it. But
so I had wanted to play I think it was Blood Rager out of that book, out of the advanced class or whatever, the one that
Was it Blood Rager or War Priest?
I think Blood Rager. Because it was the Sorcerer Barbarian kind of combination one, which, I mean, I get just the idea of it in general, and I feel like they kind of just gave you the best stuff from both and less of the bad stuff from both, so... But then at the same time, because I ended up, you know, my secondary pick was going and doing my old samurai again, now I have a big lovable street shark that I'm going to be able to carry in my pocket with me.
Yeah.
Well, so that's fun. And it just depends on what the DM or the GM in Pathfinder's... It's tomato, tomato. If you hear DM or GM, it just means Dungeon Master or Game Master. It means the exact same thing.
Yeah, and some people like to copyright basic words like that.
Yep. But, I mean, it's up to the person who's running the game to really decide how off the rails fun and powerful. I mean, not fun, because it's all fun when you get down to it. But, like, I mean, it's really up to the person running the game to make the final call in certain rules decisions, because it's up to them.
Yeah, and even more unfortunately for you, I had played with somebody who played a Blood Rager. Now, they did a garbage job compared to what I know you would have done.
Sure. Well, thanks.
But it was still one of those things that I saw almost instantly. Had they been using everything that they had to their benefit, they'd have been... out DPSing by yards.
Gotcha.
And that's why I don't like that book, and I'm really disappointed by that book, but I am...
The power creep's a little too real.
Yeah, I really want to play with it again and try to start, like I said, level 5 and kind of crank up, like, and get to 15 or so on it. I want to just see if it kind of slows down and the other classes kind of start catching up at a certain point.
You could also do like a thing where you're like, hey, you can play out of this guide, but everybody's going to start 3 levels higher than you.
That also
you start at level 1, everybody starts at level 3 to balance out the power differentials.
Yeah, and that might not be a bad way. Like I said, the one that I think is the biggest hassle out of it is the Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The getting the Ranger's favorite enemy that gives you +2 to damage and hit, and then gets higher as you gain levels.
That's pretty crazy.
With a rogue sneak attack damage on it.
Yeah.
And I think you only get 1 favorite enemy instead of 2?
Still.
But yeah, being going humans and most of your campaign is humans and you kind of have already got the idea that that's what's going to be happening. You're going to be doing so much more. It was so much. Dude, I watched him one shot a dude at level 5 with over 100 hit points.
Oh, geez.
And he one shotted him full clear, like taken out. And I was like, yeah, no, we can't do this anymore. Like, I killed that group real quickly after that. I'm lucky. I have dice that like to kill players, whether that's me as a player.
Same.
Or me as a GM killing my players.
Big same.
Which is why my dice box is split into two. There's the dice I use with you guys to have fun. And then when I feel like you guys are railroading me a little too hard, I bring out the fun dice and hit back just a little bit more. That's another thing I tend to do with Pathfinder, though, is I bulk up my characters. Like, I bulk up my PCs so that I can play smarter creatures. And I've tried that with a few things I've run with 5e. It does not work out the same, like, at all. I started running for my girlfriend's stepkid and almost killed their entire party even though I had them roll how I have everybody roll stats for Pathfinder, and I've never almost killed people in Pathfinder first encounter. Like, half of their CR almost killed them.
Challenge rating for those at home.
Thank you. But, like, that was a really big thing that I noticed kind of the difference, too, is that when I do give that extra bulk in Pathfinder, that bulk really does something for them. Whether it's the extra 2 or 3 hit points or whatever, it does really do a little bit more for them. Whereas in 5e, I've noticed it not so much do as much for people.
That's fair.
It's your own personal choice on what you wanted to go with there. But you guys got any last minute closing thoughts?
I mean, I think if you enjoy RPGs, if you enjoy the fantasy setting, and you want something that's a little more customizable than 5th edition, something that's going to let you really dig into the meat of your character and build them into this, like, super unique character.
Yeah.
Without having to add a ton of flavor. Like, you can make your Pathfinder character super unique without even having to delve into background and flavors and stuff like that. Pathfinder is a fantastic system.
Yeah, and that's one of the bigger things that I like about it is that I like flavor. Flavor's fun. I like there to be at least some mechanicalness to that flavor. Like, Sanjoro, I want to get a fire enchantment so I can actually cook on the move because that's what I want to do with that character.
Yeah.
And so Pathfinder does that just a little bit.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I love Dungeons and Dragons, but honestly, when it comes down to it, Pathfinder is the game that I, like, am probably most looking forward to getting back to. And that's, I mean, it doesn't really matter what you're playing. I mean, the group, like I said right at the beginning, the group really does matter almost more than the rules of the game themselves. It's just if you want a little less on the rules side or a little more on the rules side, and there's plenty more games beyond just Dungeons and Dragons and Pathfinder. They're the two that come to mind to everybody readily, almost more than anything else. But if neither of those themes do it for you either, there are lots of other things there. I'm sure we've talked about plenty of them on this podcast over the time. Pathfinder is just definitely one of those games that's been around long enough. I think that the idea is that it was, you know, worth giving a shout out. It's definitely one of the best, I guess, to use the word again, robust gaming rules systems that are out there. And it has the benefit of being done.
Yeah.
First edition is a complete game.
And like you said, there's also the starter sets, which are, you know, anytime you get a starter set, it's a little chunk of money.
Right.
But it's a lot cheaper than buying all 3 starter books and all the things that you need to run a game and everything. And it just gets your toes wet. It gives you an adventure path from levels 1 to 5, something that maybe you can see, oh, I really like Pathfinder. Oh, I really hate Pathfinder.
And that's another thing. You actually just mentioned a really big part of why people really hooked into Pathfinder, adventure paths.
Yeah, we should shout that out real quick before
5e,
we...
5e does a great job. They have all of their campaigns and stuff like that, but they're all big campaigns.
They are not
small, kind of sit down, maybe here in a month, be done with it kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas if I sat down with Iron Fang Invasion and we restarted and we were like, every week we're going to be here, we're going to push through this book as fast and hard as we could, we could probably push through it within 6 to 8 weeks, like a month to 2, we could be done with an adventure path that has a good ending to it with still enough of a hook that if we're like, oh, let's go play the second book to that, we can.
Yeah.
But you don't feel the need to go play
that
second book.
I love that. Like, most of their adventure paths are, what, like 6 books?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, little skinny.
3 now.
3 now?
They brought it down to 3 now.
I know the originals were like 6 books.
Or 6.
But they're just little tiny skinny, like a little bit thicker than magazine
books. A little bit bigger than a module.
Yeah. And you get those, you can play one. If you really like where it's going, it's enough of a lead-in that you can pick up the second one. But if you decide not to, it doesn't leave you hanging.
Yeah.
It leaves you at a really good resolution, unlike a lot of the D&D adventure paths, where if you get halfway through it and you're like, I really don't like this, there's just nowhere to go.
Yeah. Like, Corey had to literally try to find a way to shove the different campaign he wanted to do into one of ours, because he started with Horde of the Dragon Queen. Mm-hmm. And after just the brutalness of the startup of that and seeing, like, he saw where it was going and was like, I don't like how this is going to end at all. This is going to feel really bad. He shoved in Storm King's Thunder. And he was like, okay, I think I see where I could just change the track for you guys.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen with all of those books. And
right.
It doesn't, like, if we had played the first book of Rise of the Rune Lords, like we're doing right now, where it ends with you guys getting to the bottom of Thistletop.
Yeah.
Taking care of that. We could have just ended Rise of the Rune Lords right there, and I could have totally picked up and ran my own game.
Yeah.
That's the other
thing. We could have just started from Thistletop and just done something different.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah, we need to get back on it. We'll dedicate a whole episode probably at some point to talking just adventure paths from different groups, because I have a couple of adventure paths from Mutineer Zero that I've read all the way through that are interesting.
I'd love to tell you all my pain points of Icewind Dale.
Yeah.
I'd love to at length tell you why I think it's a garbage adventure path and it needs to be reworked if you're going to run it.
Yeah. Like,
sorry.
There are a couple of people.
It's a great setting. I love the setting.
Sure, sure.
The book is disjointed.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that there's at least a couple other people out there who have similar feelings about either 5e. I know there's a few people out there who have written their own adventures for like Pathfinder and 5e because of how some of the adventure paths go and stuff like that. That's another good thing about Pathfinder. If you need to skip a book, because that might happen a couple of times depending on what adventure path you're running, it has that ability, like we were saying, to kind of just skip over it and go to the next one, maybe fill it in with something else and kind of dip to the next bit. But I think that that's it for us here this week on Game Cabinet. We're going to go ahead and put away this shiny, brilliant light of a book, close the cabinet, dull the room,
put our dice away,
and we'll catch you folks next time.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.